Welcome to season 3 of Recovery Rocks. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Tawny. We're so excited to be back. And we are also excited to be sponsored by Tempest for this season. Tempest is a program that helps you stop drinking and start feeling better. As of this spring, they have a brand new membership program that offers monthly content, community, and expert guidance. You can learn more about all of their different membership options right now by heading to jointempest.com.
We are huge fans of Tempest. We know what fantastic work they're doing to help people stop drinking.
Absolutely. And what we love about them is that they're also super inclusive of all communities. Lisa, welcome back.
Tawny, welcome back. So good.
It's been a year.
I can't even believe it.
Since we recorded that episode with my dad and Queen Ruby Warrington.
Oh my God, at our live event. That was so much fun.
That I can't believe that was a year ago.
I can't either. I really can't.
What has happened in this last year of your life? Like so much.
What changes a year brings?
Seriously.
Well, as we are sitting here today recording, of all things, which we never would have imagined when we were doing this last year, we're sitting in a recording studio in San Diego, California.
Yeah, that was not part of our plan.
Right. It was not. I left my job at my law firm. Well, not my law firm, but at the law firm in August, at the end of August. And I had been working, you know, in law firms for almost 30 years. And fortunately, after Girl Walks Out of a Bar came out, I was able to start running around and speaking.
Your book, in case people are listening and don't know what that is, her book is called Girl Walks Out of a Bar. Go
yes.
on. I'm your part-time publicist,
That's
too.
Right. That's right. And I was doing more and more around recovery, speaking to lawyers, speaking to law students, and all kinds of audiences, not just in the legal field. And I really fell in love with what I was doing with that. And I was fortunate to be able to launch my own advisory firm for my speaking and stuff. And I will be doing coaching soon, too. So I'm also going to be a She Recovers coach.
Yes, She Recovers. We love She Recovers.
And along with that, I was able to sort of, my husband and I looked at each other and were kind of wondering, do we need to stay in New York? Because neither of us needed to be based in New York. And just a weird convergence of events. And we decided, we took a flyer, we had an opportunity, we saw a place that really spoke to us, and we moved. We left New York City, which just still seems so strange.
Well, because you're a Jersey girl. You were an East Coast girl.
Totally. I lived in the city for almost 30 years.
That's nuts.
I had been ready, but it still feels like now, as we're recording this, you know, I've been here almost 6 months, and I travel a lot, which I love, which is, I'm really fortunate to do it, but I'm still getting used to the relocation. I feel like somebody's going to come in with the hook and pull me back and be like, you got to get on this plane because you got to be at work on Monday.
You got to go home. You got to go back to work.
Yeah, exactly.
This has been a dream sequence.
Right.
Dream
you've just
sequence.
Been playing this work that you've been doing. That's because, you know, now it's like work is real. I am working a lot, but it's a whole different world working in, you know, kind of spreading the message and talking to people about recovery and stuff. So it doesn't feel like work anymore. So, yeah, so that's been a big adjustment, but a positive one in a lot of ways. And I'm sure we'll talk a lot about these things as we go through the season. But you have also.
Yes, many things. So let's see, a year. Wow. I also moved not quite as far as you. I moved 14 blocks south. My boyfriend and I moved in together. And
big step.
Big step. Yeah. And he's amazing. And so, like, you know, total opposite of your, like, spacious San Diego home near the beach. He and I are in a tiny one-bedroom apartment with a dog and a cat. Very New York.
It's a love nest.
You're so right. It is a love nest. And it works for us. Somehow it works. And so there's been a lot of, you know, getting rid of, merging of the things, getting rid of the things.
Hard edit.
figuring out, discerning what I need to keep and what I think he needs to get rid of because he thinks he needs to keep everything. But, you know, that's been huge and wonderful.
That, yeah. But the hard edit, you know, it's interesting because I had to do a similar hard edit getting out of New York, although I was in a one-bedroom apartment all the entire time I lived in the city. I never... So I never really accumulated a lot. I was good at, like, if I bought a shirt, I donated a shirt. If I, you know what I mean? I kept things out, but it is, it's a big deal to sometimes part with things. There are certain things that, even though they're objects, and I tend not to be too attached to objects, that just are like, you're leaving this behind. Like, this piece of you is done. We're on to a new sort of phase.
You know who just wrote about that is such an Instagram moment. I can't think of her real name, but Sharing My Sobriety. She wrote about, like, decluttering in recovery.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So if you're listening and that's something that you're going through, it's I would definitely recommend looking her up.
And yeah, and it's a change. Like, I am here now and I realize that people in Southern California don't walk around in January in, you know, black pants, knee-high suede boots. And
yeah, when I got off the plane yesterday, I felt like a total New Yorker because I'm wearing, like, black pants, black boots, black leather jacket.
Yeah.
And everyone's wearing shorts and a tank top. And I was like, oh.
But you got used to it quick. She's now in ripped jeans and a bodysuit.
And a little bodysuit. Still got the black boots, though.
Yes. 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 Yeah. So it is. Did you feel like in making that move in both? I mean, because that's a huge thing. First of all, giving up your space, which mm-hmm. I know you are a nester. So your space is very much your space. So to move in and share your space with Nick, and also to be living, you know, in the same space as your boyfriend, like moving in together.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I underestimated how big of a deal it was going to be. You know, you tell yourself, oh, we're together all the time anyway. We're pretty much living together. But if you still have your own spaces, you're not like, you're not living together.
Different. It's
totally different.
Like, who didn't, you know, do the dishes and.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, those little things that you don't deal with until you are actually sharing a space.
Right.
Don't come up until then. So, you know, it's been 6 months since we've been living together and we're figuring it out.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. Like, it's a journey.
It is.
Like recovery, moving in together is quite a journey.
Did things pop up for you that was it in any way triggering or anything like challenging in staying sober? I mean,
this is my first serious live-in partner since 2014.
Right.
I ended a very serious relationship in 2014 and we were living together. We were going to get married. Like, it was like, he was my fiance,
mm-hmm.
you know, we were,
mm-hmm.
it was very, that was, so some of that kind of stuff was coming up of like remembering like things that I don't want to do, things that I did wrong in that relationship that I don't want to bring into this one. Cause even though that was 6 years ago, triggers work very differently.
Oh.
Like, you know, it can.
Well, that's what I mean.
It just sneaks shit up. Comes up.
It sneaks up, right. You don't have to go fishing for it.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed for me coming out west, it was one of those things where I was, you know, getting used to a new neighborhood and all of that. And here, like, happy hour is a huge thing.
Mm.
And everything's all out about happy hour all the time. And, you know, it goes into my mind. I'm like, oh, people don't know me here. I could walk into a happy hour and, like, order a drink and nobody would know the difference. Like, nobody knows.
Same
you know, where in
plane.
New York, you'd be like, oh, my gosh, I might run into somebody who lives in my building or who, you know, who I know from work or something like that. Yeah, well, the plane. Planes
I think
always.
About that on the plane all the time. I'm like, I could get a drink right now.
I
could order whiskey and nobody would ever know about it.
That's right.
But
that's
I don't do it.
No.
I get my little club soda.
Yeah.
With maybe a lime.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling fancy.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I always, airports are always, for some reason, you know, triggering to me, not in the fact that I feel like I'm going to drink when I go to an airport, but it's like, oh, yeah, this was a place where I used to love to drink. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, because it's like, I think we've talked about it before. It's like casino, right? No clocks on the walls. It's perfectly acceptable to be drinking at 8 a.m. because people are always drinking
people are
from all over. Like, there's no judgment on sitting there at, you know, some early, super early morning hour drinking.
That's such a good point.
Yeah, that's how it always felt to me. I always said that airports were like, airports were bars with really wide hallways. Because that's like what, you know. And yeah, that anonymous idea of like, I could just disappear into this place.
Yeah.
And no one would know the difference.
And I mean, New York has that too. Like, even though it is it's actually a very small little island. Mm-hmm. Like, Manhattan is only 13 miles top to bottom.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy.
But like, you know, you see the same people in your neighborhood, but there's what, like, I don't know how many million people live in Manhattan. Like, it's, and even commute like into Manhattan. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. And it's sort of like there is New York to me, while it was associated with all of my drinking, it's also associated with all of my recovery. Right. Mm. So it's like, this is my, for a long time, it was my, you know, my substance abusing place. And then it became my recovery place, you know, through all the hard work that you do in recovery. And, you know, now I'm, when I got sort of, you know, when I plopped down here, it's like, oh, this isn't my drinking place or my sober place. This is my, you know, totally different place where I can be anything.
Mm.
And, you know, it's not.
Wow, that's so interesting. So, like, this is, like, I didn't even think about that. Like, so, like, you've only been sober in San Diego. Like, San Diego only knows sober Lisa.
Well, actually, not sober Lisa did some damage in San Diego.
Oh, when traveling.
When traveling, yeah.
Well, that's fair. But that doesn't count.
It's not the same.
That's not the same. So that's how I feel about my 30s. Because, you know, I stopped drinking at 29.
Right.
So my 30s are completely untouched by alcohol. And I just find magic in that, where it's like,
that's how my 40s were. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That was because I got sober at 38. And it was weird this year, New Year's, because I realized when we went into 2020, I was like, oh my God, the 2000 teens are the first like full on decade that I did not have a drink, because I got sober in 2004. And
oh yeah, because everyone is doing those reflection posts.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't have a drink in an entire decade. I'm like, wait, it's you know, there's something that felt that way about that.
That's such a good point. There's all these little landmarks that pop up.
Yes,
in your recovery that you would never think of.
Right,
like that. You went a whole decade.
I went, like in the numerical decade.
You've had 10 years of collective sobriety, but the fact that, like, a decade came and went and you were sober for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so cool.
It was cool. It was definitely cool. Yeah.
Did you do one of those side-by-side posts, pictures?
I did not. Did you?
No.
I didn't. Yeah.
I didn't. One of my friends did one, and I loved it because she did a picture of her at a Jonas Brothers concert in 2009, and then of her at a Jonas Brothers concert in 19.
Oh my!
And I was like,
that is amazing.
I loved it because it was also like everyone was like focusing on like, I've changed so much, I've grown, I'm evolved, I'm so mature now. And she's like, I still love the same band, and
I'm
like
still at the Jonas Brothers show where you left me at the end of the last decade.
I loved that. I found that to be so much more relatable than the look at me now.
Oh, that is hilarious. That is hilarious.
It's good. It was like, because like that's what we, how many times have we seen the Rolling Stones? Like,
I know.
We don't need to see them again, but we will.
But we hope.
They're actually
coming here. Tawny and I went to see the Rolling Stones together this summer.
That's right. That happened over the last year.
That happened. And that was just so, it was so perfect because it was in August and we were both in the midst of transition. Like, it was early. It was like August 1st or something. And I was moving out on the 31st.
You're so right.
And
I was packing.
And you were
ready
packing.
To
and it was like this sad thing because we, you know, as anyone who's been listening knows, we have a really connected bond. And we just, you know, it was very hard to leave. It was not hard for me to leave New York City. It was very hard for me to leave people. And Tawny was certainly one of those people. And so it was like this kind of poignant night at the Stones.
It was such a beautiful night. And like, I, you know, not to get super sentimental and emotional, but it was like really hard when you moved. Like, cause even we lived fairly close to each other, but we still didn't see each other that much because New York is New York.
It's New York, yeah.
And you were working at least a million hours a week, at the very least.
At the very least.
But you know, there was something very comforting of knowing that, like, Lisa is a 15-minute Uber away.
If that, yeah.
Like, that was really great. Because, you know, I don't have any family anywhere near the East Coast. Everyone's in California or, like, Northern California or Texas or Washington. So, like, having you there was really comforting, not to lay on the Jewish guilt right now. But
I've had it all my life. You can keep piling it
on. That's fair.
Yeah.
But, and just seeing your home now and, like, oh my God, you're, like, right on the beach.
Well, not right on the beach. We're at the beach.
To a New Yorker, you're basically right on the beach. Come on.
Yeah.
You're glowing. Like, you have this glow about you, and it's not just, like, a subtle tan. It's like
it's the hyaluronic acid I've been using on my face.
Well, okay, maybe it's some of that, but it seems like there's just been this softening since you've left the craziness of New York and the craziness of your job.
Yeah.
You just have this, like,
Well, I've said, like, since I got here, I feel like I can breathe.
Yeah.
And part of that, I realize, for me, like, having spent so many years in very intense jobs and long hours, and, you know, I realize that every single day, it's like, when you walk out your door in New York, it's in your face. Like, you are in it. And I realized that I had this whole sort of, just the armor dropped as soon as I walked out the door of my building, you know, and the way I kept my eyes, the way I walked on the subway platform, the way I was annoyed when somebody was looking at their phone on the subway platform and not, you know, being conscious of people
or listening
around
to their music without headphones in. That
please
is the worst.
Do
stop
please,
doing it. If
please.
You listen, if you're listening and you are one of those people, please stop.
Please don't do that.
PSA.
And, you know, so it was all, you know, like this. I feel like there was this kind of armor that I had to continue being, like, out in it all the time. And then when I got here, I don't know. For me, there has always been, like, I'm not a winter person. I can't stand the winter. And I had been ready to go from New York for a long time.
But see, you're an East Coast girl. That's so interesting to me that you're not a winter person. But you're, you've always lived on the East Coast.
Yeah. But I have Raynaud's, which is like this... kind of like a circulatory disorder where it get really cold extremities.
Mm.
So my hands and my feet are always freezing and my nose. And it's like they're freezing right now. But in the winter, I'm really miserable. I'm really miserable. And, you know, I didn't want to go out. I would never be outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I go outside. Like, there would be weekends where I just would love to, like, get home. And this is even in recovery. Certainly when I was drinking, it was like this. But, like, in recovery, where I would get home and shut the door and be like, oh, good. Like, say it was, like, the New York Marathon weekend or some crazy weekend in the city. Like, I don't have to leave the apartment again until Monday morning. And I would spend the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And then it's like, why do I live in New York if I'm spending the entire weekend on lockdown because I don't want to be outside?
Well, that's such a good point. I have those days often, or like if it's been a long day, I'm like, God, I just want to be at home and, like, not leave my apartment for, like, 2 days.
Yeah.
And I order Thai food.
Yeah.
And I watch Love is Blind. And,
oh,
like,
my God. Yes.
You know, like, it's like, but you're right. Like, I love living in New York, and I also love hiding from New York.
Right.
It's
right.
Like, there's so many options.
Yeah.
There's so many things to do. There's hundreds of entertainment opportunities and I choose zero all the time unless I have a friend doing a comedy show or you know, going to support
a
friend.
Look, but, like, what you did. Talk about the show you went to last week.
What did I do last week?
Jagged Little Pill.
Oh my God, I went to I went to Jagged Little Pill last week.
Which you should just mention
and
what it is.
I saw Alanis Morissette at the Apollo.
Yes.
In December. That was my so birthday present to myself.
Happy so birthday.
Thank you. It was my 4 years.
Amazing.
And I treated myself to seeing Alanis at the Apollo. And it was just, she played Jagged Little Pill, her, you know, phenomenal debut album, the entire album, acoustic in its entirety, plus a couple other favorites. And I was just sobbing, you know, like, because, I mean, that album came out 25 years ago. She was 19-year-old
girl. I cannot believe she did that album at 19.
Wrote this album that just transcended everyone related to this album. People from all over the world, all different ages and backgrounds related to this album that a 19-year-old girl wrote. That's
incredible.
That's like some Mary Shelley Frankenstein shit.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
That's no. That's
unbelievable talent.
Unbelievable. And that album meant so much to me. And it meant so much to me that I was low-key protesting the musical.
Yeah, right.
Low-key protesting Broadway.
Because now it's a musical on Broadway.
Yeah, it is now a musical on Broadway. And so I was like, I heard some of the soundtrack and it made my skin crawl because I've heard the originals for so long, right? And that album helped me get through so many life hurdles.
Yeah.
To hear these like Glee versions of my favorite songs, I was like, how dare they? How dare they do this?
Which is how I feel about John Mayer with the Grateful Dead, but we've talked about
I get it.
I
totally understand. But in the same vein where it's, I can see how John Mayer is bringing the Grateful Dead to a younger audience.
Right. Which I told you, you made me respect and appreciate that.
That's what Jagged Little Pill is doing.
Yeah.
The musical is doing. And so like I'm lucky enough to have won a contest to see Jagged Little Pill with the amazing folks at Big Vision. They are a New York City based nonprofit that host sober weekly events that are free to young adults, 35 and under. And they were doing a Jagged Little Pill giveaway. And I submitted, I wrote an essay about seeing Alanis at the Apollo. I submitted that as my entry and I won.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So I got to see this musical, and Lisa, I tried to hate it.
Yeah.
I was like arms folded. I was like, I'm not going to like this, but I knew I had to see it. Like, I can't talk shit about a musical I haven't seen.
That's true.
So.
And now you can't talk shit because you liked it.
I was like, oh, God, I loved it, Lisa. Yeah. I loved it. I cried.
Isn't it funny how, like, okay, so two things I would say that. One is that I love that you gifted yourself for your sober versary tickets to see her at the Apollo.
Yeah.
I mean, that. The importance of celebrating the milestones we hit and the achievements we have is so critical. We can, you know, it's we talk about, you know, feeling like, how am I going to do this? And have I done, you know, am I going to do tomorrow? Am I going to whatever? And that, but it's so important when you do something like that to take that moment and be like, look at me. Holy shit. Like, that's a big achievement. 4 years. That's huge.
I haven't had a drink or a drug in 4 years. Yeah. And like, yeah, sure.
Who would have, like, you know?
I think I take it for granted sometimes where I'm just like, yeah, I've been sober for a while. And then like moments like that where I'm sitting at the Apollo hearing this goddess of a human singing these phenomenal songs that I've
like,
just
you
worshipped.
Deserve that. Yeah.
That is how I've celebrated the turning 4 years sober. So, like, these are whatever your version of that is, like,
but celebrate yourself.
Celebrate it, even
it's
if it's
week.
Just go
it's
go
like,
get a pedicure.
Whatever
go get,
it is, it doesn't have to be 4 years.
No,
be, like, you know,
if yes,
2 days,
you're
I don't
so
care.
Right.
Whatever it is, every single day is really a miracle. Is a really huge achievement.
You're so right.
And the other thing too is like, wait, your reaction to the seeing the musical. If you were drinking. When you did that, when you saw the musical, you probably would have programmed your brain not to like it.
Mm.
You wouldn't have felt that, like you said, you felt like pure, unadulterated joy.
I did.
You can't feel those things when you're
not
drunk,
feeling.
When you're not feeling.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that is something, to me, that was one of the things that has since the beginning, you know, one of the things that's been, there's so many things that happen if you just, like, hang around and keep not drinking. But the ways that I've surprised myself in enjoying things, in seeing things, in the way I react to things that I never would have expected to react in a way is, you know, is always like such. It's a gift when something like that happens. You know?
It's a huge gift that we, you know, we continue to give ourselves.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So how about your work stuff? You've had. Some pretty interesting pieces also.
I have. I've been
written pieces.
Really leaning into the sober sex angle. That has like somehow become my brand.
You are. You are. It is on brand for you.
Ruby calls me the sober sexpert.
You are a sober sexpert.
And it's like, that is such a compliment.
Speaking of things you never expect to do in recovery, I celebrated the publication of Tawny's article on pegging at the Playboy Club with her.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so I got a piece published in Playboy about pegging a Trump supporter. It's called Pegging for Politics. You can Google it, go to my website, or just look it up on Playboy.
It's a great article because it's not like a political article. It's a bonding article.
It's, yeah, it's, you know, bridging the gap.
It's bridging gaps, yeah.
And
Through pegging.
Through pegging. I opened his mind and his butthole.
Yes.
And, you know, that piece blew up. That was in June of 2019, and I still get DMs from random people.
Oh, yeah.
About pegging, or like pictures of people in strap-ons, and I'm just like glad you read the piece.
Yeah,
but I'm
I don't need a picture of you with a strap-on.
I'm good, thank you. But so like I've been leaning into the sober sex angle, and I've done a lot of work, recently spent some time in LA interviewing sober porn stars.
Yes.
And I'm excited about that work. That is, I just had a piece come out recently, and more of that will be coming throughout these next couple months.
Yeah. Yeah. And we will be having a guest.
We will have a guest who is a sober porn star. And it's something that I'm really passionate about that we'll talk more on that episode, but porn stars are people too.
Oh yeah.
And they're the more mm-hmm. people that are sex workers that I chatted with, I learned that we're all just people.
Yeah.
Like, we're just people. We have different lines of work, but we're all speaking the same recovery language.
Yeah.
And the work that I'm doing with these amazing humans is to destigmatize both sexuality and addiction. We're just going through some shit, you know?
Yeah.
That's been exciting. Really, really cool work that I'm excited to share with you guys.
Yeah, so it's been an eventful year away from potting for us.
It's been quite a year.
Quite a year. A few things have been going on.
Yes.
So, we'd love to hear from you guys on anything you'd like us to be talking about on Recovery Rocks. We are always interested in hearing your feedback. And, Tawny, you want to talk about where to find you now?
Yes, you can find me at Tawny M. Lara. You can find Lisa at Girl Walks Out.
At Girl Walks Out. And my website now is lisasmithadvisory.com.
Advisory. Because she's kind of a big deal.
No, I am not. But I am, I do have a website.
She has a wonderful website with excellent photographs and video. and she has a book.
Yes.
And my website, tawnylara.com. And, you know, if you subscribe and comment and review, let us know what you think, topics you want us to cover, how do you celebrate your sober birthdays?
Yeah, we'd love to hear about it.
We want to know.
And we will talk with everybody again real soon. Thanks for listening.
Thanks again to Tempest for making season 3 of Recovery Rocks possible. You can find my work at tawnylara.com, TawnyLara. Find me on social media at Tawny M. Lara. And you can follow my blog at sobrietyparty.com, sobrietea. Lisa, where can we find your work?
You can find my work on my website, lisasmithadvisory with an O.com. You can also find me on social at Girl Walks Out. And you can find my book, Girl Walks Out of a Bar, at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or any other book-selling websites.
And make sure to click subscribe whenever you're listening to our podcast. You can get new episodes from Lisa and I every week directly to your phone.
Exciting.
In your pocket, like Alanis Morissette.
And then if you like what you hear, please rate us and review us. And thanks so much again for listening.